Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
The following program is a paid production of Mike Novak, LLC. The opinions, rants, confessions, and lame jokes presented are not necessarily the views of WCPT or its parent corporation, Newsweb Radio. Besides, if Mike was running for office, the tapes of these shows alone would get him kicked off the ballot.
I'm Mike Novak, and I approve this message. Hi, I'm Mike Novak, and last week I told you that I was running for lieutenant governor. Now, some people thought I was running for lieutenant governor. No. I'm running for the office below that. Like I said, I'm there because when the governor gets impeached and the guy who fills in for the governor gets tossed out, I'm ready to rock. And I'd like to thank the voters of Illinois for paving the way. I thought I was going to have to wait until after the general election for all that goofiness to happen. But no, the day after the primary, it was all set in motion. Wow, good thing nobody checked my background either. Anyway, I'll be ready from day one to step into the office that will step into the office. So think about me around general election time. Oh, and I have a message for the mainstream media and all of the bloggers and social media types out there. Good catch. Did I say I approved this message? I think I did.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Podcasts of this program, along with green tips, valuable links, and DeMaio weather, are a click away at MikeNovak.net. That's MikeNovak.net. If you can't find him on Facebook, it's because he's got a paper bag over his head. Here he is, Mike Novak.
One more time.
So, Heather and I are sitting here and we're talking about that whole election thing. First of all, I got to tell you, we've got so much stuff on the show. I don't have time to talk about this, but I'm going to anyway. You know, the day after the election is when the Secret Service report comes out
right.
in the newspaper. Hey, guess what? This guy, maybe you shouldn't vote for him.
Right.
The day after! Who's paying who?
He's
here?
A deadbeat dad who beats on prostitutes or whatever.
Holy
smokes. Yeah.
So, yeah. Good going.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I want to congratulate the media for being on top of this one.
I just want to know, they had to have known beforehand. Why were they sitting on it? That's what the only thing I don't understand.
They were checking their sources.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so, actually, apparently it was in what's-his-name's column in the Sun-Times Brown. And he was in, and I didn't see the actual mention reference to it.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd think, if somebody has an inkling that we have this kind of a checkered past.
Do you think they just waited for the primary to be over? Because then, okay, it's not a problem
why would
if the
they
guy
do that?
Doesn't get elected.
Why would they do that? Except to pimp the public?
Yeah,
you know, is that what the newspapers are trying to do now? Is that how they
That's
operate?
That's what they've been doing for years.
The public does a pretty good job of pimping itself.
It does.
Okay?
It does. It's sad, but
so
true.
Talk about your uninformed electorate.
Yeah.
Oh, Lordy. Okay, but that's Illinois. Hey, you got to love the politics here. Okay, I've got a ton of stuff we are doing today.
And I hope you stick with us through the show. To start, we're gonna catch up on Asian carp. What a delicacy. And that's what we're praying for.
Yeah.
We're praying for that it is the greatest delicacy since
Friday night fish fry.
Since Chilean bass. Because that's going extinct, so we could replace it maybe.
Yeah.
In fact, what we need to do is just take all these fish and put them in the oceans because,
There's barely any fish left in the
ocean.
There's
no fish left in the ocean.
We're killing all them off. We get caught in the garbage trail of the North Pacific.
So, Josh Mogerman with the hard G is here in studio. Great to have you here.
Good morning.
He's from the Natural Resources Defense Council. After we talk to Josh and get updated on a few environmental issues, at 9 o'clock, we've got I'll bet that's Amtrak Tim, right?
How did you know?
I don't know. The phone rings like 2 seconds after we start the show. It's got to be Amtrak Tim.
I didn't even have to type it in.
It's like...
He's psychic.
I think he's angling for a co-host job here.
Well, there's a lot of news on rail travel these days.
And actually, Josh might be able to join in that, too, because that's kind of the territory of the Natural Resources Defense Council. But at 9 o'clock, Mr. Brown Thumb is in the studio. Now, a lot of you have probably never heard of Mr. Brown Thumb unless you like horticulture and you like Twitter. The guy is, and blogging, because he has at least a couple of blogs. Probably the most, one of the most prolific bloggers, writers I've seen in the social media. He's here to hammer the idea of working social media into my head. I've been reluctantly approaching it. Josh knows that. Josh, I track him down the other day because I'm on Twitter. First time I've ever found somebody because I happened to be on Twitter at the same time as they were. And I looked at Josh had posted something like 7 seconds ago, and I had left a phone message for him, and of course he didn't return it. And then, so I tweet to Josh, I go, hey, I know you're there. Call me. And he was busted, so he had to call. But there are people who are on Twitter all the time. I don't get it. I do kind of get it, but the more followers I have, the more chaotic it becomes. If you have 100 followers, it's one thing. If you have 1,000 and they're all tweeting at the same time, you can step away from your keyboard for 4 minutes and have 100 messages suddenly, 100 new messages that you have to scan. That's what I don't get about it. It's that the more, and the goal seems to be, it's not like Facebook. It really is different. And we'll talk about that. The difference between Facebook and Twitter is profound. Facebook is the one where you say, I had a cup of coffee this morning. I love life. And then when I read it, I puke. Twitter.
You don't like Facebook inspirational with your coffee in the morning?
No. I'm just like, leave me alone. I'm gonna block your messages, okay? If you do that one more time. All right. Twitter is the one where, you type in hash mark potatoes at, substance at, Tuesday at 4 o'clock. Wow. And I read it and I puke. All right. Because it's all in code now and you can't, nobody actually writes a sentence in Twitter. They just write in code. So, and if you're on Twitter and you're listening to this and you're actually following me, this is good for you to hear. But I'm hoping some of those people will tweet us today during the 9 o'clock hour. They will Facebook us. And you can Facebook Heather. If you follow Heather, Facebook, because she's going to be on that. She's the Facebook expert here.
I am addicted to Facebook. It's pathetic but true.
I do it because I have to. I tweet because I have to. But Mr. Brown Thumb will come and walk us through that whole thing. And then probably the outrage of the week is the last part of the show. Some of you may have seen the article in the Trib where thousands of dollars of fresh foods, fruit, was destroyed, had bleach poured on it by the Chicago Department of Health. See, we're the city that's moving toward the new agriculture and the new way of dealing with food and making it accessible. I know Heather's head is about to explode.
Oh, it got me so mad.
So we are going to talk to Monica Ang from the Chicago Tribune. And we are going to talk to Lee Greenhouse, who's the chief operating officer of Flora Confections, which is the business that got hit. And it does seem like a hit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
A hit by the city of Chicago.
And they said there was nothing wrong health-wise with any
of it. No, it was all bureaucracy. It was all, you didn't sign the right papers, so we're going to pour bleach on your food.
Yeah, but she was trying to be honest.
And ruin your next 6 months of business.
That's why they were there, because she was applying for a license and paid the $600.
Yep.
Ugh. Just,
yeah. I mean, it's about as serious a catch-22 as you can get. And Flora Lazar got caught in the middle of it, and Flora Confections. And by the way, that info, the link to that story is up on my website, mikenowak.net, MikeNowak.
As is the video.
As is the video. If you go to the homepage, I've got the video of the health inspectors pouring bleach on this food. It's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you guys, and basically, you know, it's bureaucracy run amok. They're not talking to each other. We have two different departments not talking to each other, and then we have people in the same department not talking to each other, and on and on and on. We'll talk about that at 9:30. All right, Josh Mogerman is in the studio. How you doing?
I'm excited to be here. It's actually sunny today.
Isn't it nice?
Yeah.
It's a harbinger of better things to come.
I'll believe it when Rick DeMaio says it.
All right, and he will be here at 8:30. Thank you.
Harbinger of better things to come.
The question I'm going to ask Rick DeMaio is, how come we never get the good snowstorms? They always pass us by. You know, Kentucky gets more snow. They get better snowstorms than we do. I don't get it. We're Chicago. We're supposed to be in the winter place, the cold place. I don't get it. Anyway,
climate change.
We never got the good. We got one good storm, and that was 78. First year I moved here, we get this great storm, and I thought, cool. I like Chicago. This is great. Didn't happen again, really. Josh Mogerman is with the NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council. Asian carp update. The problem hasn't gone away. The state of Michigan sued the state of Illinois.
Twice.
I mean, and the first time the Supreme Court rejected it, the argument?
The Supreme Court rejected half of their argument. They asked for an immediate remedy, which was to close the locks associated with the Chicago diversion. And the Supreme Court gave a very terse one-sentence answer, which was basically no. But the larger aspects of that case are still out there, and we think they'll spend some time on it.
There's a lot of aspects, and there are a couple of links that I have because you made me aware of them. Something you wrote on the NRDC website, but something Henry Henderson wrote, and the thing that Henry Henderson wrote is the interesting one. I mean, yours is interesting too, but
thanks.
That was a really good way of putting that, wasn't it? I am so tactful. I have nothing else. I am tactful. Why don't you write something good, Josh? But Henry, the main argument of the state of Illinois has been, oh my God, if you close the locks, the infrastructure of the state will collapse. It'll be a calamity. And there's a guy at Wayne State University who apparently says, no, that's really not going to happen. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, that's, I think, the most interesting thing that came out of the second petition from the state of Michigan. There's a professor at Wayne State named John Taylor.
And by the way, I am an alum of Wayne State. It's one of the many schools I've been to.
Excellent.
Yes.
The Taylor's study is really interesting because the data on the impact of a closure of the locks has been really difficult to find. We've been hearing from lots of journalists who have been trying to find it. We've been digging around, and the stuff hasn't been there. But he has done a number of other associated surveys, and so he sort of ran headlong into all of the doom and gloom that we've been hearing. And, you know, basically some of the things he said was that closing the locks as temporarily, as requested by the state of Michigan, would likely result in an overall increase of jobs rather than loss of jobs. It would affect only 1% of regional commerce, which, you know, if you listen to the barge folks, it's everything that comes through Chicago is affected by this. Apparently not the case. It won't have the huge traffic clogging impacts of putting everything on trucks and messing up our roadways. And you know, the big thing is that it will have an impact, but it's very limited and localized on some sectors that are already seeing a decrease in business. It's the barge operators and a few others. And no one wants to see a sector of our economy slowed down or impacted. But the important thing here is that these are small problems that we can deal with in fending off this really huge problem, the carp getting into the Great Lakes.
So obviously it's a pack of lies, this Wayne State guy, because our officials in Illinois have told us that our industry is going to be affected to the tune of billions of dollars. How does he come to these conclusions?
He really dug into a ton of data, some things that we actually haven't been able to find or look around, but he has had access to data from a number of other places. I think you will hear a lot of people saying, look, this guy's paid by the state of Michigan. Of course he's going to say it's not a big deal.
You know, here we are. It's state wars.
It is.
Da, 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 da. And I'm thinking, when's the last time we really had a good state war? I say we invade Michigan. Except they've got militias there. So
I was going to say they're better
they've
armed.
They've got a lot more guns, and they have a higher employment rate.
Are you kidding?
So
we got Chicago. We got so many guns in Chicago.
Yeah.
Come on. I think we could. I think we send their gangs, our gangs, after their militias. How do you like that?
I don't know. Detroit apparently has wandering packs of feral dogs running around
yeah,
in some parts.
They
I mean,
do.
I'm not ready to invade
and then there's
yet.
There's lots of abandoned houses for, you know. Yeah.
But they're feral. Warfare. They're as likely to attack the Michiganders as they are the Illinois.
We'll throw in some Chicago
here.
Italian beef and they'll be our friends.
Yeah.
Or Asian carp. Let's throw the dogs Asian carp.
Exactly.
They can eat that.
We've got plenty of those.
Wow.
And are they in the lake? Have they penetrated?
Well,
is it official?
The eDNA testing shows them in Calumet Harbor in Northwest Indiana, which is in the lake. There are a lot of folks who are debating what that actually means. But if you talk to University of Notre Dame and Open Lands Project, the folks who are funding those tests, they are pretty adamant that they think that there are actually fish in these places. And what's important to remember is this is not the end. We don't have to just give up because,
well, yeah,
oh,
it was gonna
fish
be the next,
is in the lake.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
The important thing here is to ensure that we have that we limit the amount of fish that get in there so they can't get established, they can't start breeding, they can't be in big numbers. One or two, no big deal.
You know, in a sense, if one Asian carp leaps out of Lake Michigan, in terms of the lawsuit, it's game over.
Yeah.
That's the way I think.
Yeah.
All it's going to take is one, and people are going to say, there's your proof, you know, and at that point, it might be too late. Who knows? The problem is we don't know. Now, you bring up a wonderful analogy in the column. You see, your blog was actually pretty good. You have another analogy. You have an analogy about what's going on here, and the world is full of those analogies because we have screwed up so many times introducing species that shouldn't be where they were. But tell me about the one that you write about.
Well, I used to work at Brookfield Zoo before I started at NRDC, and for most of the time that I worked there, one-third of the world's population of Micronesian kingfishers are at Brookfield Zoo. And this is
That's a bird.
Yeah, this is a bird that...
Just for those people wondering at home, well, what's a kingfisher? But it's a bird.
It's a bird that lives on a few islands in the South Pacific. I think that's where Guam is.
Yes.
During World War II... Guam was a bomber stopover and refueling station, and along with bombs, there were brown tree snakes on some of those planes.
Where did they come from, the brown tree snakes?
I don't know. Where
just
did they come from?
Elsewhere.
They came to Guam from the plane?
Oh, yes,
or they
sorry.
Came from Guam to the plane?
They hitchhiked on American and Allied bombers, and when the planes landed in Guam, the snakes got off. And
this is our stop.
Well, for the snakes, it was a great stop because they found this really lush island that was really easy for them to move around, and a lot of animals, particularly birds, that weren't adapted to deal with a stealthy predator that would climb out on limbs and eat them. And so, in fairly short order, in just a few decades, most of the island's birds were eaten by the snakes. One of the hardest hit was this Micronesian kingfisher. They're kind of slow, probably not very smart birds, and they were easy pickings.
They deserve to go. If you're not smart, you know, it's what we call natural selection, pal. Haven't you never heard of that? Haven't you ever heard of the Darwin Awards? Come on.
Well, you know, some biologists would say that invasive species are just a part of the natural order of things, but that's when they make it on their own. There's a natural movement of things. It's something else when we introduce them. Bad things happen. In this case, there are no more kingfishers on the island of Guam. In the late 80s, I think it was 60 that were left were grabbed up, and they exist only in zoos now. And I'm not saying that.
There are people who would say at this point, let them go. You know, let them go. I talked about this last year. There's a guy who says we should do the same with the pandas. It's not worth the effort to keep them. It costs millions and millions of dollars, and it's better served protecting species that will actually come out of their decline.
Well, but I think what's important here that's very different is we have an opportunity to stop the Asian carp. They're the brown tree snake in this story. I'm not saying that if Asian carp get into the Great Lakes, they're going to make all of our native fish go extinct.
But there would be more than one species, likely, more than likely.
Yeah, there are a lot of species that are sort of on the brink right now in this ecosystem that are already under immense pressure from other invasive species. There are 180 plus invasive species that are in the Great Lakes ecosystem. This is one in the Asian carp that have the potential to have a significant impact. And the difference here is we have an opportunity to stop them before they get into the lakes.
Yeah, we're actually paying attention this time. It's not like the brown snakes are out,
right,
and suddenly we notice there's no more kingfishers here.
Right.
What happened?
Right.
No, you're right. This is us trying to be ahead of the game for once and do the right thing. And that's what annoys me, is the dithering on the part of the state of Illinois and the politicians here and the administrators in the state of Illinois. We know this is a danger. They're talking about it'll hurt the traffic, the industry, transportation industry. What about the sports industry the $7 million?
$7 billion,
and the economic impact would spread even farther than that, I believe. And Canada would go to war with us.
Well, maybe just the province of Ontario.
And I wouldn't blame them.
I wouldn't either.
And they would join Michigan and go to war with us.
Well, I do think that this is going to be a very interesting week. We have the White House meeting with the governors.
I'll tell you what. That's coming up. We're coming up on Rick DeMaio weather. Yeah, you got the White House meeting. I want to get back to that. That's Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council here in Chicago. And I want to talk about what is happening, because there are some things set to happen this week. If you got a question or comment about it, feel free to call us. I see Heather's, she's calling Rick. But if you want to talk, and before we, move along, here's what I, let's go to Tim real quick. Tim?
Hi, Mike.
Hi. Listen, my question to you is, since you're the train guy, do you have any information or an opinion about, how transportation might be affected, especially rail travel along the canal here, if we close the locks? Have you looked into that at all?
No, I haven't. What I'm curious about is that in this discussion,
how much of the barge traffic actually has to transport into the Great Lakes. I don't see very much barge traffic on the Great Lakes themselves. So why is everyone up in arms freaking out?
How far does the barge traffic go, Josh?
Well, it actually goes the other way. It's goods coming off of the Great Lakes and into the city of Chicago and down the Mississippi River.
Right, but they have to be transferred from a lake lake freighters to barge. I mean, what you see on the Illinois River is very different from what you see actually in the lake.
Absolutely. You know,
well, I'll tell you what, Tim, I want to talk to you, and Josh is going to be here till the end of the hour. Can we get back to you on this? You've got some more rail travel news today?
Yeah, I do. I'm going to call you back in like about half an hour.
In about 15 or 20 minutes. How's that?
Okay, sounds good.
You are the man. Talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Rick DeMaio weather coming up in just a minute. The January-February edition of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is out on the newsstands, and I've got the inside scoop on why you should pick up a copy. This is the Get Ready for Gardening Year edition, which means that there are stories about how to interpret what's on a seed packet and how to set up grow lights for when those packets arrive and you start raising your little plant babies. Speaking of seeds, if you're planning to grow tomatoes this year, and who isn't? If last year was a bad tomato year, this year ought to be a great tomato year. I guess that's the way those things go. We'll ask Rick about that. Anyway, there's a guide to open pollinated heirloom varieties. And if you want to be the first on your block to have the latest and greatest varieties of annuals, Ball Horticultural's Jim Now presents his must-have list. This is the gardening magazine for our region, which means Chicago. You can find Chicagoland Gardening Magazine in your local store or garden center. More than 800 new newsstand locations have been added in the last couple of months, but why trudge out to the store when you can have it delivered to your home? There's even a guy named Mike who writes a column in the back of the magazine. Because he's a lot snappier than that Josh guy. You never know what kind of column he's going to come up with. Actually, he bows in Josh's direction. And Mike wrote an article about how to transform your yard in 20 minutes in this issue. He's everywhere. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. And then Mike said, if you plan to grow vegetables this spring and summer, why not start them from seed? We just talked about that, and one of the great places you can go to pick up seeds is SIDS Greenhouses. For the cost of one plant, you could purchase a packet of 35 to 40 seeds. I mean, that's one of the great reasons to have seeds. It really does save you money. Starting plants now from seed gives you almost a two-month head start in the spring, and with a little planning, you can have transplants available throughout the growing season, so your garden is continuously productive. And if you want more information on seed starting, last week I talked about this book, I'm going to find it here. Give me one second. Is it called Starting Plants Indoors? I'm glad you remember
starting, it. Starting Your Seeds Indoors or Starting Your Plants Indoors, something along those lines.
It is called, where is it? It was right here. Starting Seeds Indoors, yeah, by Ann Riley. And I've got a link to it if you go back to January 31st, last week's show. I'm telling you, it's a $3.95 book. $3.95. It tells you everything you need to know about. No need to get a big fancy book about growing seeds. And you can even give one to your neighbors. So, anyway, now's the time to pick that up and get the seeds. And SIDS Greenhouses and Garden Centers ready to help. Their shipment of flower and vegetable seed packets is in, and they have the largest selection of seeds in their history. So, no need to order from catalogs this year because SIDS has what you need. Or if you're like me, it's like, I don't want to wait. I want to bring them home with me. The popular varieties go fast, so visit SIDS early for the best selection, along with expert advice and seed starting supplies. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. A reminder from SIDS Floral Shops, Valentine's Day is 1 week from today. Visit SIDSonline.com to order Valentine's flowers today and enter promo code VALENTINE. Ladies and gentlemen, the promo code is Valentine. If you say that at the checkout, you get free local delivery in order for orders of over $50. And that's good stuff. All right, where were we? I'm looking for a little music here to get into. And I know Rick DeMille's going, can we get on with it already? Oh, it would. All right, let's just get.
You got to push the button.
I know. I got to have that button ready, too. You know, it's so complex running your own board. Let me try it one more time. Here we go. It's not what I wanted, but yeah. Rick DeMille Weather. How you doing, Rick?
I'm doing fine, Mike.
Good. Hey, I don't know if you heard the question that I posed earlier in the show, and the question for you is, how come we never get the good snowstorms?
Well, we don't have something called the Atlantic Ocean and the Gulf Stream right next to
us. Well, the Atlantic Ocean and the Gulf Stream. But aside from that, why don't we get the good storms?
No. Well, you have to think about it in a couple of different ways, is that when the storms that come through here in the Midwest, usually get large cyclones that the snow will go all the way from, say, Green Bay down to St. Louis, Omaha, over to, say, Cincinnati. The storm actually that hit the Mid-Atlantic region was only about 300 miles wide. In other words, there was a couple of different bands of snow that developed in what's called the mesoscale.
Okay, I'm going to have to stop you there, Rick. The phone connection is not good.
No.
Now, is it your phone or is it the connection? Should we try again? What do you think, Rick?
I can maybe move to a different room. You want me to do that?
Are you on the cell? Is he on the cell this morning?
I'm on the cell, yeah.
Okay, go to the... I know that you're not at home today. And you're on location, but...
How's this? It's a little bit better?
A little bit.
Keep talking, because what's right, happening is sort of dropping in and out.
I got it. Okay, how about this?
That's better.
All right, yeah. Well, what happens is storm systems that move through the Midwest generally are much larger. Okay, so you have snow that goes all the way from like Green Bay down to St. Louis, Cincinnati, Kansas City. This band of snow that dumped 30 inches in Washington, D.C. only is about, say, 50 to 100 miles wide. So if you take that snow and you basically extend it all the way from, say, New England down to Cape Hatteras, you may only get 15 to 20 inches, but because all of it came in one narrow band, it seems like a much larger storm. But it really wasn't. It was a small-scale storm developed across southern areas of the Ohio Valley, intensified once it hit the Gulf Stream, and essentially stalled. So you have to kind of think of it from a standpoint of, you know, large-scale areas of severe weather or one supercell producing a tornado, and this is kind of like that one supercell, I guess.
Okay. What illustrates that point is that Philadelphia got like 26 inches and New York City got pretty much, right?
In New York, you got about 2 to 4 inches. Southern sections of the New York metropolitan area, about 6. Last I saw Washington, D.C., Dulles came in with 32, which is an all-time record to them. And if you think about it, back in December, they had nearly 20 inches of snow, so they've had almost twice as much snow as we've had in basically 2 storms. That just doesn't happen too often.
It sure seems like it does, though. It seems like it's always happening, you know, south of us or east of us or something like that. But
I think if you would go back to the first week of January when we were still in a fairly snowy pattern, you would probably say, why are we getting all the snow? So I just think it kind of works out that way. And, you know, after talking with, I was out with a couple of friends last night, a couple of meteorologists, we were kind of basically saying the same thing, is that when the East Coast of the United States get these kinds of snowstorms, there's really only 2 other places in the world where you get this intense cyclogenesis where you have very, very narrow bands of heavy snow. And one is off the East Coast of the United States, and another one is off the coast of Japan. That's it.
Oh, so Japan gets this kind of thing.
Yeah, Japan more so north of Tokyo. You have 3 islands there, Honshu, Hokkaido, and Ryukyu. And the northern sections of Japan, where you had the Olympics in Sapporo and Nagano back in, I think, 98, typically get narrow bands of heavy snow because you have a continent to the left, which is obviously Asia, an ocean to the right, which is Pacific, and you have the Kuroshio Current, which is the warm current, which basically replicates the Gulf Stream current. And if you look at the east coast of Asia and the east coast of North America, they're basically the same. You have one large body of land that's cold and one large body of water that's warm. And then you have these cyclones that can develop in a very short amount of time and cover a small distance with a lot of snow. Nowhere else in the world does that happen, Mike. I think that's kind of the neat thing about studying weather in the United States is you get to see a lot of these things that happen in our nation that you don't see anywhere else in the world. So people say, oh, my gosh, we get all that kind of stuff. Well, that's because we're kind of unique. Continent, ocean, North Pole to North, Gulf of Mexico to the south, and, of course, the Rocky Mountains. And don't forget that the Appalachians is kind of like our second continental divide.
All right. And the other thing, from what I understand, we get that most of the world doesn't get is tornadoes, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. When you see the way these systems develop across the middle part of the United States, if we didn't have the high plateau of New Mexico, Arizona, Old Mexico, as I call it, west of Texas, that area is in a very dry mass, which usually allows the back edges of these large-scale severe weather systems to have a tremendous amount of dry air injected to them. People think that all you need is moist air for thunderstorms and tornadoes. But you don't. You actually need a combination of the two, which induces updrafts that are able to get these storms going for a long period of time. So while they do get tornadoes in parts of Florida, there are different types of tornadoes, but when you look at Tornado Alley here in the United States, again, there's nowhere else in the world that gets this kind of weather. And that's what I try to teach some of my students, is not to take the weather for granted, but to understand it and then look at it on a standpoint of, you know what, you kind of have to look at it this way, because it also helps understand the geography. There's many students these days in school that live a very kind of insular academic life. This is what they want to do, and this is all they're going to study. And they basically take their gen ed classes to get their 3 credits out of the way. And because I teach mainly gen ed classes, I try to teach every general education class as a way of taking advantage of understanding the world around you. Some kids grab on to it, some kids don't. The ones that do, usually the ones that probably go on to bigger and better things, and the ones that don't, you know, end up like you and I do at radio at 8:30 on Sunday morning.
Yikes. Okay. And I know you need to get going today, and I'll tell you, the connection's still funky. So let's get the forecast, and I'll let you go.
Okay. Obviously, sunshine today, a little bit of a mixture of clouds out there. The clouds picking up during the day tomorrow. Then it looks like we get into a snow pattern for Monday night into Tuesday. And right now, we could be anywhere between a 4 to 8 inch snow event for Chicago. This could be the biggest snow since the 6th and 7th of January. We're running pretty much near normal snowfall for the year. And if we get the 6 to 8 inches on Tuesday, it'll probably put us above normal for the year.
So that you're saying that would put us, I'm going to repeat it because it kind of dropped out, that would put us above normal for the year, but just barely, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
But still less than what we had last year at this time, for sure.
All right. And 4 to 6, what did you say, 4 to 8, somewhere in that range?
Somewhere in the 4 to 8, and you're probably saying that's a large range because there's still a little bit of uncertainty with it. But again, being that we don't have any Gulf of Mexico moisture with this thing or Atlantic Ocean warmth, we're not going to see the 30 inches that D.C. or Philadelphia areas.
Right? Well, I just didn't expect that. And then after that, does it get cold again?
Very cold, yeah. The pattern looks very cold for the next 7 to 10 days, with probably temperatures averaging about 5 to 10 degrees below normal. So I know last week, Beth Bott, we were talking about the need to have snow on the ground, and even though we have about a couple of inches out there right now, actually a little bit less north, this snow will actually do us really well as we head probably into, I wouldn't be surprised if the snow again on Tuesday lasts until maybe the end of the month. So some good news there going into the growing season.
That actually is good. If we can get 4 to 6 inches of snow cover, and that will help preserve some, or, you know, moderate the effects of the cold weather that comes in afterward. Okay, so some snow, like Tuesday-ish, and then gets cold, and I guess I'll see you next week.
You'll hear me next week, that's right.
All right, take care, buddy.
Okay, see you, Mike.
Bye-bye. That's Rick DeMaio. He's here every Sunday at 8:30. You can go to his website, demioweather.com, or you can go to mikenovak.net and connect to his website there. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Do you know that tree care is a more dangerous job than police work or firefighting or even blogging? That's what a study by the University of South Dakota shows. That last part was a joke. And every year, homeowners are injured or killed trying to do their own tree work. You should think twice, or maybe three times, before performing tree work of any kind, especially if it involves climbing, working from a ladder to prune a tree, and certainly attempting to cut down a tree. The problem is that in this economy, you're going to be tempted to do it yourself to save a couple of bucks. But the care of trees is fully insured to cover workers' compensation, property damage, and personal liability in case of accidents. Are you? With 9 locations, the care of trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years, putting you and your trees first. Make the care of trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard or you're changing your landscaping, invite the certified arborists, and that's the key. They are certified arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
DR Services Unlimited has been providing Chicago's North Shore with award-winning remodeling and design-build services since 1991, giving their clients top quality service and real value. They're on the cutting edge of green building technology, helping clients make their home more energy efficient without sacrificing beauty or function. If you want to make your home more energy efficient, simply want to add a room or renovate, call DR Services at 847-998-1687 or visit them at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
You can't go wrong and pick a panther theme.
Yeah, but this isn't Counting Crows. This is
no, Henry Mancini.
This is what? What's going on here? I think I grabbed the wrong one.
Did the radio station Gremlin put your CDs in the wrong cases?
I don't know. That's a possibility. I have to see what the thing is. But you're right. You can't go wrong with Henry Mancini.
No.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council is still in the studio here, and we were talking about Asian carp between 8 and 8:30, and we want to wrap that up because there's some doings in that area this week. What's happening?
Well, big doings in Washington, D.C. tomorrow. You have Great Lakes governors, Quinn and the governors of at least Wisconsin and Michigan, perhaps some of the others, are going to be in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have a carp conference. The hope is that they'll hatch
out.
You know,
anytime you say the word carp and attach it to anything at all, it sounds
cool.
It sounds funny. It sounds goofy. Okay.
So they're going to see if they can hash out a new direction on this. I think everyone recognizes there's a threat and something needs to happen. We just need to get consensus and get moving. There are also going to be a couple of congressional hearings. And then Friday here in Chicago, there's going to be a public hearing at EPA's office. One of the things that I think will be really interesting is there have been a couple of press reports out that say that the EPA and Army Corps of Engineers are going to be releasing a new framework for managing this problem that may or may not include changes to the way we manage the locks here in the Chicagoland area.
Really?
Yeah.
So maybe there's going to be some movement here.
I think there will be some movement. It's a question of whether it's enough and whether we can be consistent and focused. And I think most importantly, whether this leads to the big solution. You know, it's wonderful to close the locks. It's important to slow the advance of the carp. But the most important thing is that we have a permanent solution to this problem, and that may or may not involve separating the ecosystems once and for all so that we don't have fish going between the Mississippi River Basin and the Great Lakes Basin.
Well, and that's one of the problems, that even closing the locks is not the complete answer because the streams are so close to each other, the rivers and the channels that have been dug out, that if we have a bad flood, they could float into the water table anyway.
Well, and you know, at this point, they've already been found in the Des Plaines River up near Wilmette, or at least the DNA has. And so that is an ongoing issue. And I don't think anyone thinks that closing the locks is a solution. It just gives us breathing room so that we can slow the advance and figure out, you know, there's no doubt that this is a big job, separating these two ecosystems. It is going to come with a big price tag, but hey, that's jobs and an opportunity to fix a lot of things like the transportation network that you were referencing before.
Yeah, well, that's what I don't get is how this zero-sum game, it seems to some people end up only one, is so one-sided, like all industry will stop. Well, no, wait a second. If you're doing work, even if it's changing the flow of the river, or you're creating engineering so that it doesn't flow, that's creating jobs too. It's a different kind of job, but it's also jobs.
Yeah, you and you know, as cities and as industries go, you innovate or you die. And we are operating off of century-old infrastructure for our sewage, for our water management, for transportation. You know, railroads are one of the things that built this city, and we have a tied up, ugly railroad system right now that it takes days for some trains to make their way through Chicagoland. That's something else that needs to be addressed.
See, now at that point, the phone is supposed to start ringing, and Amtrak Tim is
I was setting it up for him. Where is he?
Where are
Four,
you, Tim?
Three, two, one.
Oh, not yet.
His speed dial isn't working.
Yeah. He ran to the washroom, I'm sure. He's probably there, and his kids are like, Dad, get to the phone.
To wrap that part of it up, I just got an email from Sandra. She says, I've noticed most Illinois politicians are not very bright when it comes to this issue. Environmental issues seem to be at the bottom of their priority list generally. That's not always so. We've actually had some good movement in Illinois on other issues, like food composting and several other things, but this one in particular. See, this in regard to this, this is not a legislative issue at the moment. This is an executive issue. This is administrative, because something needs to be done right now, and then down the road, the legislature needs to address what happens. But I don't personally see, and you agree, this is not a legislative issue.
Yeah, this is not a legislative issue, and I think it's, while we have been disappointed with the way the state has reacted to Illinois' suit, I don't think it's fair to say that Illinois hasn't been taking action on this and that it doesn't recognize this as a problem. I certainly think that the Illinois DNR has been one of the really good players in this, and they have worked very hard with limited resources to deal with this in as proactive a manner as possible. And they certainly have been open to new voices and new ideas, and that's something we haven't necessarily seen from some of the other players.
And so where's the Attorney General? Why is the Attorney General fighting this?
Her take on this was actually somewhat interesting legally. She basically said that Illinois doesn't own or operate this canal, and therefore we shouldn't be sued over this. I think it's a little legalistic, but there may be some veracity to her claims. That's why I think this White House summit is so important this week. It's an opportunity to pull the politics out of it.
And also say, if we're not responsible for that, if it's the feds, then you guys are here. Let's get something done. All right. That's Josh Mogerman from the NRDC. You made me aware of something else going on. So we're talking invasive species. Fish is one thing. Trees are another. This is a mind-blowing story as well. So tell me about the tree invasion.
Well, there's a great story that I think ABC broke talking about genetically modified eucalyptus trees that are going to be introduced in the Southeast. A couple of paper giants, International Paper and Mead West Vaco Corp, are taking eucalyptus trees, which apparently grow super fast, and something like 27 feet in 6 months. They're bringing them in for paper and biofuel production. while it's certainly an interesting idea, I don't think you need to look any further than, say, Jurassic Park to get an idea of, you know, what could go wrong with this. And you know, eucalyptus trees are trees that have been introduced in a lot of places and really wrecked the ecosystem. They grow so fast, they outcompete other slow-growing trees, and they really move like weeds. And so it's a real threat.
Like maybe buckthorn or something
yeah,
like
well,
that?
Yeah, well, yeah, we certainly have real obvious examples here in the Midwest of things that are just as problematic.
And they now, obviously, I'm sure the companies would say, well, don't worry, we're going to have them on a tree farm. They're not going anywhere. And are they sterile? They'll probably tell you that they're sterile,
yes.
Too.
And that's the genetic modification. They have tweaked it so that they are sterile and won't be able to reproduce and spread. That hasn't worked in other places.
Well, there's a tree called the Melaleuca in the South and has basically taken over Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't this a similar thing, a tree that grew fast and somebody brought from another land and let's turn it loose here, and won't that be great?
Yeah.
And it has, you know, crowded out most of the native vegetation or trees in Florida, or a lot of them. And this sounds like a disaster waiting to happen.
It certainly does. I mean, it certainly has been disastrous in South Africa, where it's thrived in arid conditions. These guys are saying that because of the climate in the areas where they're introducing it in the southeast, it's wetter, that we won't see the same sort of problems. I think you will need to watch this.
You know,
it's kudzu all over again.
If we learn a lesson from the Asian carp, it's that we need to figure that out before we put them in.
Yeah.
That's what we do. We're really good at throwing something into a place where it shouldn't be, and then 20 years, 50 years later go, oh, you know, maybe we shouldn't have done that. Maybe that wasn't such a good idea. It's just too frustrating. Well, it's just one more thing that I can lie awake about.
Do you sleep at all?
No.
I was going to say.
No, not at all. Certainly not before this show. when I start thinking of these things, holy smoke. Well, Josh Mogerman, Natural Resources Defense Council. If you want more information, you can go to the NRDC's website, which is www.nrdc.org, or you can go to my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show. I've got the link to the thing he just blogged on and other things about the Asian carp, and you know, follow the links along, and you won't go to sleep ever again either. Josh, thank you for coming down. I always appreciate when you do.
It's always fun. Thanks a lot.
Coming up on the 9 o'clock hour. Oh, I'm girding my loins for social media. We'll see. Mr. Brown Thumb is in the house, and we're going to talk to him about keeping up with Twitter, and Heather will help us keep up with Facebook, and we'll see what good any of this does. And then later on, we're going to talk about that awful situation in the city of Chicago this week when a few thousand dollars of food got destroyed by the health department for no particular good reason at all. And that's all on the Mike Novak Show, and we will resume these conversations right after CNN News. Guess what?
It's live radio.
Josh, we got more time.
Sweet.
Asian carp are bad. Eucalyptus trees that have been genetically altered are bad. And Norwegian maples are bad.
Here's what happened, folks. The clock that I'm supposed to use is not working right. We got another clock. And that seems to be okay. I guess that's going all right. Jeez Louise.
That was a 7, not a 9 or whatever, right?
Well, you know, I was looking at that clock. And so, Josh, what do you want to throw in the last 2 minutes here?
Well, you know, there is a really important climate change impact that ties in with
I knew he'd have something, too. It's just like,
Josh, that's why we love him so much.
You wind him up and you set him off. Go.
IUCN, the folks who manage the Red List and look at endangered species around the world, released a report this week talking about the three biggest dangers facing biodiversity in the world. One of them is invasive species. The other is climate change. As growing zones change, as we've seen here in the Midwest, you have plants moving up and taking over places where they weren't and messing up the ecosystems.
Well, we know that there is climate change in plants. If you go to Chicago Climate, what's the name of it? Climate Action Plan.
Yeah.
They'll show you how the climate is changing so that plants that were once southern Illinois plants are now at mid-Illinois, and that in 50 years maybe in the Chicago area. And that includes things like kudzu mm-hmm. that you talked about before. That could be a problem here at some point. But the problem, you know, in a day-to-day way, I can't tell people that we're zone six as a garden expert, so-called garden expert. It's so-called. You can't tell people to plant zone six plants because we're not really zone six. We still get down to minus 20 or minus 10, and that's going to do in those plants. So it's a tricky thing to say, well, we are now a different climate zone. All right. That's our bonus time with Josh Wilgerman. I'm looking at the right clock now, and I think we're coming up. You know, I probably panicked a few people who use this to get to church. They go, well, at 9 o'clock, then I'll get ready, and I'm going to head out the door. Oh, my God, what happened to those 3 minutes? All right, CNN News is next. We will see you after 9 o'clock.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by SIDS Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Podcasts of this program, along with green tips, valuable links, and DeMaio weather, are a click away at MikeNovak.net. That's MikeNovak.net. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Welcome to the technology segment of the show. And speaking of technology, first let me introduce Mr. Brown Thumb. How you doing, Mr. Brown Thumb?
Doing pretty good. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. He is, like I said, you may not know who Mr. Brown Thumb is, but a lot of people do. You got a few thousand people following you in one way or another, and he doesn't even have a radio show. but he is the king of Twitter, one of the kings.
I don't know about that. Maybe the court jester?
Good. There you go. And one of the things we're going to do this, half an hour or so. And in fact, you're welcome to stick around till 10 if you want, Mr. BT.
Okay.
And I've been sworn to secrecy about his real name.
Well, no, you can use it.
Yeah, I can use it. But nobody, he says nobody will know him because most of what you do is
under the name of Mr. Brown Thumb.
And it's on Twitter, and it's on your blogs, and it's on not so much Facebook. You're not huge on Facebook, are you?
I don't really use it that much. I use it. I just use a fan page, but that's about it.
Yeah. I don't even have a fan page. It's just me. He said, don't be a fan. Just be my friend. I need so many friends. I'm so sad. But see, the Facebook expert, you're sitting next to her here.
Oh, really?
All right, yeah.
I love Facebook.
She is just
I love it.
Out of control. So what we want to do here, now what I've got to do is, and I didn't even think about this myself, I've got to log on to my Facebook account. So,
oh, mine's up and running.
I mean, not Facebook. Well, both. I want to log on to
I have to admit, though, I have not tweeted.
You haven't tweeted?
I have not tweeted. I gave up MySpace for Facebook, and I have yet to cross over to Twitter.
So I've got to go to Twitter here and get online so that we can do this. If this is this computer not going to? Oh, I got a feeling that when Mike
connected me, he disconnected me.
He disconnected me. Mike, I'm not online. That's
you can
what
hear.
Happened.
Take my keyboard, sir. Take my keyboard.
Okay.
And here, you can open up a new Internet Explorer window. How far the mouse will stretch, though, is
I don't
another.
Know. Maybe we can get Mike in here to just do that around, because otherwise, wow. As you can see, the technology here is overwhelming.
We make you earn it.
Let's while we're doing this, and while I'm going, Mike. What do you think about Twitter? I mean, how's that working for you?
I think it's a pretty awesome little tool to use to stay connected with what's going on in the gardening world in Chicago.
And I know you do. The problem with that I found with Twitter is that you actually have to go on Twitter.
Well, you can do it from your phone. You can.
No. See, I refuse to do that because that would just take. You'd just be answering tweets all the time. Do you use your phone?
Sometimes, yeah.
I had that for a while. And then I said no. I started getting stuff from people that I didn't know, and I'm not that interested in it. But the problem with, as I said earlier, let's say you got a Twitter account in there, and one of the things I'm discovering about Twitter is, first of all, let me set a scene for you. A couple weeks ago, Ron Wolford, who's with Illinois Extension, Cook County Extension, which is Master Gardeners and lots of other services, but it was a Master Gardener meeting here in Chicago, and I am a Master Gardener, and Ron was talking about social media. Heather, would you go out and find Mike?
Sure.
See what's going on. He decided to do a talk on social media for Master Gardeners. And he said, here's how Twitter works. And it was basically Twitter, because he's not a Facebook guy either. And I'm thinking, okay, you get your favorite, but that is not necessarily the be-all and end-all. Because, like Heather, you talk to Heather, she loves Facebook, won't deal with Twitter. And then lots of people will deal with Twitter, but they don't do Facebook so much. And here was Ron in this room full of Master Gardeners, and there must have been 40 or 50 of us in there. And he's trying to extol the virtues of Twitter, and I could see their eyes glazing over. Honest to God. Now, I know you use it all the time, Mr. Brown Thumb, but I could tell they were thinking, why does this work for me? And why don't you explain it? I mean, how does that work for you? You say you network with it. What do you learn through Twitter?
Well, I learn about different events going on around Chicago, or I use it to communicate with other gardeners if I have a question or they have questions. You just brought up Ron Wolford. I'll give you an example. This summer I met Ron Wolford on Twitter, and he invited me to see the urban farm at the Cook County Jail. So I went down for their harvest festival.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I figured one day, it was like, I wonder what they're going to grow next year, because somebody in charge of the garden was telling me that they were hoping to one day have the garden set up so that it would pay for itself,
mm-hmm.
and it wouldn't cost taxpayers any money. So they were going to plan on selling produce from the garden at the county jail. So then I connected him with Renee's Garden, a seed seller from Twitter also, and she gave a huge donation to the Master Gardener programs. So I think in one way that you can do is you can connect with people and connect people that you know across your networks.
Mm-hmm.
To benefit good in your own communities or your neighborhoods or your gardens or among just your friends.
Yeah. All right. Now, one of the things we got to do right now, because we're still – thank you for coming in, Mike. Appreciate it. Mike's helping me get online.
I do what I can for you.
I know you. He's at my beck and call here on Sundays. For the rest of the week, not so much.
Not so much.
Not so much. Did you tell your Twitter people to tweet us during the show? Have you gotten anything yet?
Yep. The Chicago Honey Co-op is listening, and she says Facebook is boring.
And we don't have Heather in the room to refute her, because we're still trying to get me online here.
Another fellow gardener, My Skinny Garden, she's listening. She says she's listening to the show. Zamboni, she's a cook/garden blogger. She's listening to The Yarden, is another local garden blog. She's listening to Alexander
wow.
Roman.
This is
gardener.
More listeners than I've had ever on this show in 2 years. I've got like 5 listeners now. This is great.
Oh, there's another one right here. And Sandlin, she's listening to.
You know, I wish I were on so I could.
So you could see.
So I could see if there's anybody on my account. But you have, you have how many? You have like over 1,000 people are following you.
There's 2,000 accounts. I'm not sure how many of those are real people who are actively engaged all
right,
the time.
And that's the other thing that folks say about Twitter is that it's a lot of people give up on it after there's a huge dropout rate, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. It seems to be like for a while that you'll have some, maybe you'll have some, you'll connect with somebody who's talking to you all the time, then they just fall off the face of the earth, I guess.
And I wonder, well, why do you think that is?
I think, like, it's a fad. People pick up with fads, and some people stay with them, and other people drop them off when they find something else.
Uh-huh.
They realize it's not as great as they originally envisioned.
Beth Botts is one of... Ron, of course, Ron Wolford.
He's now... Ron is the king of Twitter, of gardening.
That's
on Twitter.
That's true. He is.
Because he has more accounts than anybody else I know, and he uses them all. He uses
That's
them
the other thing. He doesn't just have followers. He's got multiple accounts, and I can't even handle my one account. You okay, Mikey?
It's hot under this desk.
Okay, it's all right. You know, by the time... Should I just use
I'm
hers?
I'm just trying not to be noisy,
I should just use that other computer. I just don't have any room to work it here, but...
Yeah, give me 5 minutes. I've got you covered.
5 minutes. This segment will be done, pal. But that's okay. Go ahead.
All right, here
and
I go.
I'm going
back down.
All right, see ya. Mm. Come up for air when you need it. Ron has multiple accounts. I can hardly keep up with one, and he's got thousands of followers on various accounts.
Yeah,
which just seems nutty.
It's kind of genius, though. I mean, the way he's.
But you have to. There's so much. How much time per day do you say you would spend on Twitter?
Probably all day.
You lost me right there. You lost me.
Because I mean, it's either on the phone or on the computer, so it's pretty easy to. To just check
see,
in.
See, but
or...
that's because you're doing it on the phone. No, no, no. See, we know that's online.
We're going to put you on this
one. Oh,
you're going to put you on this one.
Oh, we are going to put
There's
me on
no
that
one.
Ron Wolford just said he's listening.
Oh, Ron, how you doing, pal? I worry about you. You tweet too much, pal. That can't be good for your health. All right, so what I'm going to do here
is...
Swing that around. We just gave up on this other machine.
What's this live radio thing?
I know. You know, this is what I get for trying to do technology on the radio.
Here.
Right here.
Cannot be televised.
All right, let's see. The revolution, technological revolution, will not only not be televised, it won't even be broadcast at this point. All right, Twitter... .com. Let's get on there.
People are really excited to hear their names on the radio, I guess.
Are they? All
yeah,
right.
From
well,
then the reactions.
Oh, why? Who got excited?
Alexander Roman. He's a follower. Alexander underscore?
Mm-hmm. By the way, if you're listening and you have a Twitter account, I'm Mike Now. And the reason it's Mike Now, because it's immediate. Actually, it's because Mike Novak was taken.
Yeah.
So... I can't believe that, and the guy probably never uses it. Let's see, what's the...
How does tweeting help gardening, then?
Wait, hold on, let me put you on your
mic. How does tweeting help gardening?
Weren't you
How
just...
does it make you a better gardener?
We already kind of went over that, so... But Mr. Brownthorne says it's connections.
Yeah.
All right.
Networking. It's all about networking.
It's networking. Okay, come on.
I love how they call it social networking. So you can put it on your resume as such. I am an excellent social networker.
I got curious, so I looked up Mike Novak, and he hasn't used it since March.
See?
Of 2009.
Oh, boy. Now, wait.
Oh, we need to take it back.
I think so. Now, what can't I get on here? I've got my name. It should be just... Mike Now, right? Username? That's all I need to type, right?
Yeah.
Sign in? I mean, on my own computer, it's all memorized. Yeah, I mean, it's saved on there. The computer memorizes it. I don't. Let's see. Let's try one more time. Come on,
baby. The greatest thing to
do
is the instant gratification, too. You put media out there, or news out there, and bam, it's recognized within moments.
All right. Here's one. The Yarden writes, tell Mike that resistance is futile.
Yeah.
Resistance is futile.
Mr. Brown Thumb, you should just fix their computer for them. he says, Mr. Brown Thumb says, Urban Garden, that's Ron Wolford, is the real king of Twitter for gardening, but he's not as funny as Mr. Brown Thumb. Say something funny, Mr. Brown Thumb.
I don't know if I can do it under pressure.
So let's see who we've got listening here. I've got the Urban Garden. So like you said, Ron's listening. And one of his other identities is listening, Cook County. But that's the same guy. He's just texting under the wow.
Indoor gardener, I guess, from Washington is listening, too.
Really? We got somebody on the internets?
Yep.
Wow. Let's see here. There's four new and that's the other thing. In the time that I just started reading those, four new tweets popped up. Mm-hmm. So I have to refresh those and...
How many co-ops says hello?
Let's see, an indoor Gardener says, "Oh yeah, love our names on the radio." See, now this is fun.
This is fun.
But and it's immediate, you know, because I listen to Stephanie Miller during the week, they're always saying, "Hey, we just got this tweet from." Well, you know, it's possible people have been tweeting me while I've been on the air, but I haven't had the account open. And now, where's the refresh button here?
Up at the top, next to the red X at the top. To see the little two arrows pointing like that. Higher.
Oh, here we are. They hit it on me.
Uh-huh.
Here.
They reconfigured the layout.
Mr. Brown Thumb just... I got to tweet something here, too, right?
Sure.
Of course you do.
It's your show.
Yeah.
It is my show. So what do I say?
Yeah, and you need a tweet treat about something sweet.
No.
I don't know.
No.
Speaking of something sweet, I was just at Sweet Saturdays yesterday at the Garfield Park Conservatory. And it was crowded. It was packed with people. It was a pretty awesome event.
It's beautiful.
And that's the other thing. I bet you tweeted about that.
I did a little bit because I was there helping One Seat Chicago get votes, get voters for the plants this year. And so I was kind of working. I didn't really have time to walk around and enjoy the show like everybody else did. But it's pretty cool. It was pretty cool. I suggest you – the next one's on the 13th. So I suggest if anybody wants something to do the day before Valentine's Day or is looking for somewhere to spend a nice day with the kids or the family, check it out. It's pretty cool.
The Yarden writes about Urban Garden, Ron Wolford. I had no idea you were such a social media rock star. Did you see my tweet, by the way?
I'm not convinced, kids.
You know, that's the problem. It's like you walk out. If I walk out of the room for 5 minutes and come back, there will be 80 new tweets on there.
See, I thought that would be hardwired to something your personality would enjoy, because you are like the 80 tweets. You do 80 different things in a five-minute session.
That's the problem. I'm already doing that.
So it's a personality conflict.
It's going to give me a heart attack to try to keep up with this.
See, I use my Facebook every week. I put the link for the show up, your website, our streaming website, who's going to be on, everything that's going on with the station, and then the station has its own Facebook page, too.
Yeah. Look at this.
The wave of the future.
Already.
I need to get Twitter, I guess. I have to give up and get it. I haven't, like I said, I've abstained.
It says, My Skinny Garden writes, Mr. Brown Thumb and Mike Now are making me late for church. And Alexander Roman, ha ha ha, thinking about what to tweet on his show. Well, that was it, I guess. That's what you tweeted. While we've got these coming in, and you know, in this sort of immediacy, I feel the community for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and I've seen some of these back and forths that go online. For instance, what is the deal? There's a wonderful name, a woman who tweets, and it's Kiss My Aster, and
nice,
and she really does seem to have an attitude thing.
Yeah.
And is she feuding with this other woman, the one who had the picture of P. Allen Smith, and what's her name? I got to find.
No,
her.
I think they're friends. They're really good friends. They know each other in person. It's just kind of like a joke, or I guess a back and forth.
Okay, because. You know, that's the other problem.
Although you can
with this.
Watch feuds erupt on Twitter. That's pretty interesting.
I've thrown down on Facebook with Republicans. Big time.
Oh, by the way, Ron just wrote Cook County Extension under his, you know, he's just showing off. What he's doing right now is he's going to his various accounts and sending tweets just to prove he can.
He's just doing it to mess with your head.
He is messing with me. But he does bring up one important thing. When you go to somebody's Twitter account, you will see how many people they're following, how many people are following them. And by the way, I'm trying to build it up here, so you folks that are listening and tweeting, get me some people to follow me, okay? Otherwise, this doesn't make any sense. Because I've been working it ever since I went to the meeting, Ron, you'd be proud to know, I've been working it, all right? And trying to get more people to follow more people, and that's the way you do it. It can suck up your whole day. It just goes on and on and on. So if you go to the Twitter account, you see how many people are following you, how many people you're following, how many lists you're on. They can put I'm on 28 lists and I only have 313 followers. So I'm thinking, my God, it's like two people per list that are on these lists. But the other thing is how many tweets you've sent, and one of the things that Ron is making me aware of is that Mr. Brown Thumb here in the studio has tweeted 19,000 times.
Actually, I haven't. I'm not that bad. I haven't. That seems to be a glitch with Twitter, because on Friday I was at 6,000 tweets, and I know I didn't tweet this many.
13,000 tweets on Friday? It's like your fingers would fall off.
Yeah.
All right, good. I feel better.
Okay. I was only about 6,000, because I remember around the time of the Haiti earthquake, I was at 5. So I don't think I have
still,
this many tweets.
5,000. I've tweeted 164 times, okay? And I think I'm spending too much on Twitter.
But most of what I tweet is probably junk, because it's just to amuse myself or amuse other people that follow me. So it's not like...
Now, I agree. I do the same thing. I'll think of something like, oh, that's funny. I need to put that on Facebook later.
All right.
I do that.
And you people on who are listening and following us, and I'll bet some of them are not even listening. They're just following the tweets.
Well, actually, somebody is tweeting now... at Kiss My Astrid, letting her know she was just mentioned on the show. So they're listening.
Remember, they can listen online, too, at chicagosprogressivetalk.com. You can always stream us while you tweet.
Actually, you can go to MikeNovak.net and just log on there to MikeNovak.net and follow us online. Alexander Roman just... tweeted, everyone should follow Mike now, please. RT, great show. All right, explain RT. I know what it is, but
retweet. It's when somebody reposts what you tweeted the first time. So an RT is just a retweet. And Zanboni and the Yarden, and maybe the Honey Co-op too. They wanted to point out that Ron uses TweetDeck. It's an application that lets you have more than one account.
I get TweetDeck. I haven't used it a whole lot. I was working with it the other day and messing with it. And you can actually, although I haven't figured out how to make it work, you're supposed to be able to tweet and have it go to your Facebook. I thought I signed up to do it, and then I tweeted, and it didn't go to my Facebook, so I'm frustrated by that. You know, that's the other thing. If you don't get it right... the first time, that's how you lose people, too, is you get frustrated and you think you're doing it right and it doesn't happen. Retweeting is an important part of the whole Twitter thing, right? Mm-hmm. When you take somebody else's message and then you retweet it, what good do you think that does?
Well, you expose your audience to somebody else's message, so it continues on that way. New people will expose new people to whatever the first person tweeted.
Uh-huh.
It's just a way to, it's sort of like telephone, like gossiping, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It is. And now I just, the Yarden writes, we can multitask. I'm listening online and tweeting.
And tweeting.
And then there's the other thing that I've noticed here, a perfect example just happened on my screen, which is somebody called AZ Landscape, number one. They just tweeted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 tweets. And that's the way a lot of people do it. It's like they get this information and then they just do it all at once. Boom, 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 boom. It's not like they're a stream or every 20 minutes or something they do a tweet. They tend to do it in clumps.
Mm-hmm.
And do you do the same thing generally?
Yeah. And there's James, I'm going to mispronounce his name, Peruvano. He says familyfarmed.org is listening in.
Oh, great.
Yay.
Great.
And for those folks out there who traditional gardeners who haven't crossed over to the World Wide Web, they can always, pick up the phone and call us old school. We'll take communication any way it comes, because that's what the caller just said, that she's too old to tweet and does not go online, and you need to tweet that this is a radio show and that people can still call in.
Well, that's actually a very good point. Mm-hmm. Whoever just called in.
Marguerite.
Marguerite. Thank you, Marguerite. We're dealing with all sorts of sophistication here. Some people can just handle radio. Some people have computers. I know people who listen to the show who don't even have computers. Some people can handle, like Heather, can handle Facebook, can't handle Twitter. Some people like the Twitter better. Most people who are on Twitter are already on Facebook, I've found, but they tend to use, whichever one they like better.
Right.
I have all these questions, but I want to talk just briefly about you, Mr. Brown Thumb. How did you get interested in horticulture, and why is that your raison d'etre?
I think I got interested in from watching the Karate Kid movies, the Mr. Miyagi, this whole thing with the bonsai, that's what got me interested in.
It's the old bonsai trick.
Exactly.
Right?
That's how they lured me
You
in.
Even know how to pronounce it correctly.
It was the gateway plant to gardening.
The gateway plant to gardening. That's scary. Do you do a lot of gardening yourself?
Yeah. I started with bonsai, then it went on to like houseplants, and then houseplants weren't enough, so then I had to add perennials and annuals, and it's kind of like a mixture now of perennials, annuals, and indoor plants, and a lot of seed starting. I think it's kind of like my new thing.
Is that for 2010, is seed starting?
I think like for the past few years, my interest has relied mostly on seed starting and seed saving, like blogging about starting and saving seeds and little tricks or tips associated with that.
Do you have them up and running? Have you started your seeds yet for the year?
I haven't started yet. One of the things I like to do is I like to buy seeds from retail locations, like the big box store, see what they're carrying.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody really has their seed displays up yet, or I haven't come across them yet.
SIDS.
Yeah, we've been advertising them
SIDS.
On the show.
They are the guru of gardening.
They definitely have their seeds in. And I'm looking here. A couple of things, because people wanted to know who are tweeting and not listening. Whether they'll be able to hear this conversation. Yes, I will take the audio. Heather and I slam it together after the show, and then I post it online. I call it a podcast. It's really not a podcast because it can't go to your pod. It's more of an audio archive that you can listen to on your computer. And I'm working on getting it to, and I said that like a month ago, getting it to a real podcast so you can just download it and take it with you. But at least you have the audio. Mr. Brown Thumb tweeted that the link that you can listen live, but you can also go to my website, mikenovak.net. It's right on the homepage. There's a link. So I think he's going to tweet that too.
Yeah, there's an application too to listen to it on your BlackBerry via the station's website too. There's like three different ways you can download the stream and listen to it. So you can have it on your BlackBerry, you can have it on your computer, you can have it.
Wait, you can do that on the BlackBerry?
Yeah.
Nobody tells me nothing.
See, that's hence why Mr. Brown Thumb is here. We're going to
talk
tech.
Exploring all that. All right, here's what we're going to do. Mr. Brown Thumb, you're welcome to stay, and we will continue to tweet because I think this next topic, are you aware of the story of the fruit that got destroyed this week?
Yeah.
That's just, has that made its way out over the tweetosphere?
Mm-hmm. I think Honey Co-op, was it Friday or Saturday? She was, it was one of the things that really got her upset. She was tweeting about that. Also, Alexander Roman, he's a chef, a trained chef, so he's starting a garden this year, and he has a blog, too. So he was passing that link on Twitter, too.
Excellent. We are going to go into that story in just a second. So, and Mr. Brown Thumb is going to stick with us here.
They just created a hashtag for you.
You're not a
hashtag.
Instant gratification.
Oh, wait. Now I got to find it. Where's the... I'm trying to...
Refresh.
I don't have the right... there we go.
You have an invasion of mice
we
there.
We have too many mice here on the desktop. You can't believe the chaos here. So,
that's why it's fun.
Let's see. And one to Mr. Brown Thumb, dude, you rock. If anyone missed the beginning, like me, we'll see it later on the podcast. Mike Novak, did she put the link on? Who's BG Garden?
Oh, she's from Ohio.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think she's from Ohio. Let me make sure.
We're getting my tweets geography. From as far away as Ohio.
Yeah. Well, she just puts Midwest on her location, but I'm pretty sure it's Ohio. Or maybe it's Iowa.
Zamboni writes, we got to get Mr. Brown Thumb back from the dark side, which they call flowers. He needs to start growing food.
Well, I do grow food. I'm just not like...
Hey, listen, I like
flowers,
too.
I like flowers, too.
Yeah,
you can eat some flowers. There are edible flowers.
Uh-huh.
Can munch away on a bush of marigolds and have a great day.
Oh, there's my hash mark. Now, what does that mean? That was the other question, and I realized it went out of my head, went flying out of my head. So before we move on here, earlier in the show, one of the things I said was, I think what scares people from Twitter these days, when Twitter first started, and I joined this, a little bit after it started, but a year ago almost, and there were actual messages then. Now it's all hash marks and at signs and code and shorthand. And if you glance at it, your eyes glaze over and you go, I don't know how to decipher this, especially if you're new to it. Do you see that as a problem?
Actually,
obviously, you're going to say no because you understand all that stuff.
Right.
But I do. I think somebody who's... there's Kiss My Aster. getting on board a little late, she writes, I claim blonde RT. What does that mean?
She claims blonde as she's making a joke about blondes being dumb.
Oh, okay. And BG Garden writes, BG Garden, Ohio. Rock!
She's from Ohio.
Way to go, well, Ohio.
We were talking about the hashtag. If you just click on a hashtag, it allows you to follow conversations that maybe you're not keeping very close tabs on.
Yeah.
So if you just click on the hashtag, you'll be able to see all of the tweets that have been posted under that one. So we can go through it now. We can see it keeps everything in one location.
So it's a way of organizing. Yeah. So if you see a hashtag and the word or phrase that comes after the hashtag is something you're interested in, click on the hashtag because you're going to see a bunch of tweets about it.
Right.
And the at sign is just for, you know, that's the code you put in front of the name of the tweeter.
Yeah, so they can see that you've mentioned them.
Yeah.
And then you can take a hashtag and just search for it, and you can keep up with tweets that way, too.
Okay, we need to move along here because we got to cover this story. Where's Amtrak Tim? He's on line one. All right, let's bring him in real quick. Are you on Twitter, Amtrak Tim?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
But I can bring a little train story here to go with the whole technology issue here.
Well, I was just going to say your technology is 19th century technology. Trains.
Well, Well, other than, you know, not the diesel electric hybrids, which I hope Amtrak will put out soon.
Sure.
But anyway, why is Amtrak so slow? If you go through the list of the improvements that are in this high speed rail bill, one of them is in Ottumwa, Iowa. In Ottumwa, Iowa, they are right now throwing the switchers by hand, like they did in 1910.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the improvements we need desperately to have to get our rail speeds up in this country. We've got people out there in Ottumwa, Iowa, who are on the California Zephyr line, who are throwing those switches by hand.
That's not good.
That's what I mean. When you hear the word freight train interference on Amtrak,
that's what they're talking about, huh?
That's one of the problems. We've got 18th century technology, and we want to have a modern rail system.
Yeah,
but that's going to get fixed. That's in the rail bill. They're going to
actually
get
19th century technology, but you know what's one century?
Yeah,
and another.
Unless you're a Cubs fan, you know.
He cuts right to the quick.
Yes, he does. She likes that. Heather likes that. That's great. We have to upgrade that if we're going to bring rail into the 21st century, and it needs to if we're going to.
And if I could add something to your flowers versus gardens discussion here.
Okay.
What I always do is I plant flowers at the far side of my garden,
mm-hmm.
and the idea being that the little bees to get to my flowers have to kind of go through my garden, and hopefully they get a couple hors d'oeuvres before they finally get to the main course.
Oh, you see, that's the same philosophy they use in the supermarket where they put the milk in the back so that you have to go through the whole store just to get to the stuff you really want. So, but I think that's a good idea. All right, listen, Tim, I always appreciate you calling. I got a lot of stuff to do. We're going to move on, all right?
Talk to you later.
Take care. That's Amtrak. Tim, he's a regular caller on the Mike Novak Show. Man, they're still tweeting. Here. It's just
stop.
They won't stop. Well, I hope they.
You've opened the Twitter floodgate, Mr. Novak.
I know the Twitter floodgate has been unleashed. Great. Let us. Oh, and Guy, real quick. Okay, I got to go to line two. Thank you. Guy, are you there? Gary, rather. I'm sorry.
Gary is here. Good morning.
Gary Oppenheimer, and this is one of the. Okay, I wanted to do an example of how you could benefit from Twitter. Gary and I met on Twitter just the other day.
Okay.
And he's doing some great stuff. Gary, tell me about your organization.
Thank you. AmpleHarvest.org is a national campaign exclusively on the Internet, and the elevator speeches, it's a effort to get 43 million Americans who grow fruit, vegetable, and herbs in their backyard and often grow more than they need to be able to easily find a neighborhood food pantry eager for their produce so that when they've harvested what they want and can't use more than they have, the excess produce can be easily donated to a neighborhood food pantry. We have 43 million gardeners, 49 million hungry Americans. We have a zero-cost way of diminishing hunger in America, and that's what AmpleHarvest.org is all about. And we've been using social networking, Twitter and Facebook in particular, to help to spread the word across the country, encouraging both people to get food pantries in their communities to register on the one hand, and to help inform gardeners on the other hand about this opportunity to diminish hunger in their communities.
That's fabulous. One of the things I loved about going to your website, Gary, is that you've got a locator. You can type in your zip code and then find a place to donate your excess food. And, you know, I always talk about that during harvest season here in Chicago and during the growing season. Are you the first person to do this nationwide? What's the technology you're using here?
As far as we know, this is the first. There's a program that's been out for a long time, since 95, called Plant-A-Row, which had a somewhat similar idea, except they were putting people on the ground in different communities and working to have people plant extra food and then donate it. We took a different approach, and that is we were going to people who get overwhelmed with the produce they get, which is anywhere. We don't need any people on the ground. This is 43 million backyard gardens to take those extra tomatoes, cucumbers, zucchinis, and herbs, and to find a pantry to make the donation to help move that food over. What we've done also, and you may not have noticed on the website, it's not just the website. We recently released a free iPhone app so that anybody who has an iPhone or an iPod Touch can download this free app. And whether they're growing food in their backyard or whether they are in a store shopping someplace, they could find neighborhood food pantries, see what the food pantries are in need of, and either harvest and donate or shop and donate.
I think it's just a wonderful service. The Yarden just tweeted, Ample Harvest rocks. She didn't exactly spell rocks correctly, but we know what she means.
You can't expect perfect spelling on Twitter. You just have to let your spelling, you know, go.
It's been very, very well received nationally. We have an opportunity to actually diminish a major problem in this country without reaching into people's pockets. We just reach into their backyards.
That is fabulous. Here's what, Gary, you and I are going to talk again because this is such a great service. And what's your handle on Twitter?
AmpleHarvest.
AmpleHarvest. So those of you tweeting, just go and start following AmpleHarvest. Let's get him up a few thousand from this.
And if I may say, the next time Chicago considers dumping bleach on food...
Oh, dear. We're talking about that next, you know.
We have a better place to send that food to. Get it to a food pantry in the community instead.
It's just a shame. I appreciate the sentiment. In fact, I need to get to that story. So what I'm going to, Gary, what I'm going to tell you is you and I are going to talk again. Because I also want to talk about this little thing you wrote to me in an email. He actually used that technology. But... He says, you're the Al Gore of email, right?
Nah, that's an overstatement. I was in there really, really early.
He was involved in a prototype email program in 1975. Now, we don't have time to go into it, but at some point, you and I will talk about that on the air. But it sounds pretty cool.
Still something that's fun to talk about.
All right. Ample Harvest.
AmpleHarvest.org.
.org. And or on Twitter, Ample Harvest.
Correct.
We are going to talk soon, Gary. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and have a good Super Bowl Sunday.
You too. Bye-bye. This is the Mike Novak Show on WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We are going to talk about that issue that Gary just brought up in just a second. But I got to let you know, if you plan to grow vegetables this spring and summer, why not start them from seed? As Mr. Brown Thumb is going to do. You'll save money, have fun. You can grow exactly the varieties you like. For the cost of one plant, you could purchase a packet of 35 to 40 seeds. Starting plants now from seed gives you almost a two-month head start in the spring, and with a little planning, you can have transplants available throughout the growing season. So, your garden is continuously productive. Now's the time to start this year's vegetable garden, and Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center is ready to help. Their shipment of flower and vegetable seed packets is in. They have the largest selection of seeds in their history. They know what's going on. People are starting to plant vegetables. So there's no need to order from catalogs. Ah, you might want to do it, but you can just walk over to Sid's and walk out the door with your seed packets. You know that the popular varieties go fast, so visit Sid's early for the best selection, along with expert advice and seed starting supplies. Sid's, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard. A reminder from Sid's Floral Shops, Valentine's Day is 1 week from today. Visit sidsonline.com to order Valentine's flowers today and enter promo code Valentine. It's not like a password where you try to disguise it. No, you want the opposite. You want people to remember. The code is Valentine when you get to the checkout for free local delivery of orders over $50.
Attention teachers! Want your class to really engage in American history? OneHistory.org has presentations that make history come alive. A 10-year-old Civil War powder monkey. A Depression-era 7-year-old pushing a horse plow. A group of teenage girls facing off against Southern bigots in the Civil Rights Movement. We know how to reach your students. Whether it's for a history class or providing a context for American literature, our presentations get to the heart of history. OneHistory.org. The truth is in the details. Check out our website, www.onehistory.org. That's www.onehistory.org. Or call us at 216-956-6300. 216-956-6300.
You know, well, we'll get more into that. I'm sorry I got so carried away with the whole tweeting thing. It's just too much fun, but they continue to roll in. We'll get back to it in a second.
Just wait, they're really going to roll in a second.
They will. WRD Environmental would like you to remember something that Aldo Leopold wrote. He said, "The outstanding scientific discovery of the 20th century is not television or radio, but rather the complexity of the land organism. Only those who know the most about it can appreciate how little we know about it. The last word in ignorance is the man who says of an animal or plant, what good is it? If the land mechanism as a whole is good, then every part is good, whether we understand it or not. If the biota, in the course of eons, has built something we like but do not understand, then who but a fool would discard seemingly useless parts? To keep every cog and wheel is the first precaution of intelligent tinkering." At WRD Environmental, they not only appreciate the complexity of our region's ecology, but are dedicated to protecting, restoring, and healing it. WRD creates sustainable landscapes, from large-scale master planning to community pocket parks. For innovative, sustainable landscape development, choose WRD Environmental, located at the Chicago Center for Green Technology, and online at WRDEnvironmental.com. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And now to a story that I mentioned earlier. Who have we got? Okay, Monica's on. Let's go to line three and bring in Monica Ang from the Chicago Tribune. Monica, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you, Mike?
I'm great. I'm so glad that you can be with us today. On line one, we've got Lee Greenhouse, who's the chief operating officer for Flora Confections. And Flora by the way, good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Mike.
Thank you also for being with me. If you were watching or saw online on the Tribune site an article by Monica, who I have on the line here, about the health department, City of Chicago, coming in and pouring bleach on perfectly good food that was ready to be processed or was in the midst of being processed. And I just want you to start, Monica, how you got involved in what you saw happen unfold, because you were there at the scene when this happened.
Well, a colleague earlier this week, last week, sent me a note saying, you know, I know they're having problems at this shared kitchen called Kitchen Chicago, where all these artisan bakers and candy makers and caterers work, but the city has not been able to understand how this kitchen works and update their licensing situation to license everybody properly. And so I said, okay, well, let me take a look at it. I'll give a call. So I'd been calling the Department of Business Affairs this week. You know, they basically ignored me until the story came out. And then I talked to Alexis Leverance, who owns Kitchen Chicago, and I had a preliminary interview with her. But then on Thursday, she calls me again, and she says, you know what? The health inspectors are here, and they've been here all morning, and they're starting to throw away our food, and they're becoming very aggressive. You might want to come and check it out. So I said, okay, great. I was in the middle of another assignment, but I put on my coat, and then she called back, and she said, you know what? We think it might just inflame them more if a reporter's here, so better not. So went back to my work, and then I got a much more, intense phone call from Flora of Flora Confection. She said, you know what, I think maybe you should come out because this is getting really, really ugly. So I drove over to Kitchen Chicago to find the, very agitated cooks and chefs and inspectors filling out a lot of paperwork and seemingly threatening to, they'd already destroyed a whole bunch of food, and sort of the next step was to destroy all this beautiful fruit that has been preserved over the summer from Green City Market just to make these beautiful Valentine's confections of fruit gelées. And I ended up being there a lot longer than I thought. I had another assignment afterwards, and I watched the health department ignore the pleas of Flora Lazar's son to please just wait a minute until they can clear this up and make sure that they're doing the right thing, because they had calls into the commissioner and to the alderman saying, hey, we've gone through all the right steps here. This shouldn't be happening. Can these inspectors just wait a minute, or at least until they come back in the morning, because they were coming back in the morning, before they destroy basically this woman's livelihood for the next 6 months and the primary ingredients for her confections? And they refused to. So at the heart of it is basically it's a licensing policy shift and, I think, bad communication between departments. Should I get into the licensing issue?
Well, I want to ask first Lee, who is with Flora Confections, how bad a hit did you take on your business?
Mike, a hit, I would say this one health inspector destroyed our business for at least 6 months, and here's why. Ours is an artisanal confection business based very, very heavily on locally produced fruit. And we had thousands and thousands of dollars of fruit, which we had purchased from local farmers. We had processed and stored them correctly. And these are fruits that were obtained at harvest time and therefore cannot be replaced until the next harvest. So we, this is essentially puts us virtually out of business for the next 6 months, except on a limited basis where we can still source a few things.
That's pretty severe.
And the crazy thing, Mike, is this could have all been avoided.
Well, how could it? That was one thing Monica was going to get into right now, the miscommunication, the lack of communication between the departments, various city departments in Chicago. What departments, Monica, are involved in that?
Seems like zoning, the Department of Business Affairs and Consumer Protection, which issues licensing, and the health department. The health inspector kept saying, sorry, this is not my fault. This is all about the licensing folks in business affairs. And then when I talked to business affairs, they said, oh, well, this is obviously a health rule. And I said, well, stop pointing fingers at each other. Maybe you guys need to talk.
But yeah, it sounds like a bureaucratic nightmare or maze that you got caught in, Lee. And from what I understand, you guys were just trying to do the right thing. You weren't trying to fly under the radar. You actually went out of your way to try to get that license.
We started this business last year, Mike. We went through every single step in terms of licensing that we were required to go through. One reason that we were working at Kitchen Chicago was that they are a, we bought a kitchen that was in compliance with the city of Chicago's health rules, which makes it easier for a business like ours to get up and going. As it turns out, what the city said, and you know, out of one side of its mouth, and what it did out of, you know, the other side of its body, were not the same thing.
And this, and let me clarify this. This is a kitchen that a number of different groups have been using. It's a kind of umbrella kitchen for various businesses, right?
Right. It's a wonderful innovative idea that we have in Chicago, which is it's a shared use kitchen that startup culinary businesses can use without having to have the tremendous outlay that you would normally have to start a food business. So you can, it's really the analogous thing to a small company that needs an office and goes into an office suite situation where there's already a phone system and a copy machine and a conference room, and they just pay by the hour. That's essentially the same concept here, and it's worked very successfully in Chicago. There are a number of food businesses that are well known that have got their start working through shared kitchen spaces like Kitchen Chicago.
And
they have a, you know, they're actually now in their second facility, which is a beautiful, modern, clean space. So one of the reasons we were there is to take advantage of what's a wonderful thing in Chicago. There are several of them in the city of Chicago. There's also one in Evanston.
Right, and they have not had the same problem. And from what I understand, it's because the city departments are not talking to each other properly. Within even single departments, the people, depending on who you talk to, you're going to get different answers. Is that right, Monica?
Yes. I was told that even up to 2 weeks ago, Flora went to the Department of Business Affairs and said, okay, well, we're told now that we can finally get our separate license. And the gentleman there, I believe she cited David Chan, said, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, so then she goes back to John Castaneda in Business Affairs, and he says, oh, yes, you can do that. So how difficult is it for people in the same office to just get their policies straight? But regardless of this, the spokesperson for Business Affairs says, no, everybody has the same message all the time. Well, then why would I hear from so many business people that Business Affairs is saying you cannot issue more than one license at a single address? Obviously, they have been saying this to people, but the department doesn't want to admit that they've been sending out these messages.
So,
yeah, this is a crazy thing, Mike. So we have an incubator like Kitchen Chicago. It's been operating for several years. Its mission is to provide a home for fledgling food businesses. And the way that it had been operating is that it had a license, and everybody who operated within its premises operated under that license. But then it turns out the city changed its mind and said, oh, no, you cannot have more than one business at the same address. So then, if you're one of the businesses that was operating Kitchen Chicago, and you were now told you had to have your own license, you went to the city business affairs department for that. They said, no, you can't. You're not allowed to get a license because you're not allowed to have more than one business at the same address.
Yeah,
so we're caught in this Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
Only it wasn't cute or funny, but basically
22.
Toxic here. An Alice in Wonderland situation where you couldn't meet their requirement.
Yeah,
they're basically putting the whole concept of the incubator, out of business.
And we've got about a minute left. It was a no-win situation. Oh, good. We got more than that. I'm looking at the wrong clock. I am so happy. I did this in the first hour, too, and it got me in trouble. Good. We're having technical difficulties here. Good. I'm so happy that we have this time, because that's the part that makes me crazy, and I'm sure it makes you crazy, Lee, is that they said one thing, and you said okay, and you know, you had to get a license, but you couldn't get a license. I mean, it was an absolutely untenable.
It's crazy. But that's only half the story, okay? If it sort of ended there, you'd say, well, this is typical city bureaucracy, fine. And so to deal with that problem, we went round and round in circles for a while with different people at the Department of Business Affairs who told us different things. Finally got our alderman, Bidaly, involved, who was very helpful. And we thought we had a resolution, and we're then on to the next step, which was to have an inspection done. So the Department of Business Affairs told us last week, inspector is going to come out tomorrow, so we paid our fee to have that inspection done. The guy from the health department, the inspector shows up, and he knows nothing of the history of this. And the first thing he says is, well, you're all operating, you've been operating without a license. Therefore, all your food needs to be destroyed. And this individual inspector refused to heed any pleas to just stop and find out what was really going on. We had our alderman trying to get a hold of the commissioner, and we told him that, and he refused to stop. We tried to explain to him this whole situation. He was absolutely hell-bent on just destroying all the food, regardless of whether it needed to be destroyed or any of the background. And I think, aside from being a tragedy in terms of our business, it's a real cautionary tale about the power that individuals can have in the city of Chicago to do this kind of thing. I mean,
you know, I just had somebody tweet and said, can this happen in Ohio? I mean, is this a kind of bureaucratic nightmare that can happen anywhere, Monica?
Well, I sadly have only seen Chicago, but I can imagine, you know, I have in ensuing days heard, you know, not such great things about health departments and how sometimes they end up being patronage jobs, and sometimes a single individual can end up really kind of screwing up a business for someone, and it turns out when there's a lawsuit later that they were operating on a misunderstanding of the facts or the codes.
And, you know, this is, we're just about out of time here, but, you know, at a time when we're talking about the new urban food agenda, this is not the time to go back to the dark ages and use bureaucratic roadblocks on people who are just trying to have a business, get a business going. So in about 30 seconds, Monica, what would you advise people to do? One thing I'm going to do is I'm going to put a list of aldermen online to contact. Who else? What would you think?
Well, I'd say, you know, I don't want to screw this up, but the city, in their defense, all they say to me is, we love shared kitchens. We love small businesses. We want to do everything we can to help them. This is such a great concept. But, you know, in reality, it wouldn't seem like they're supporting them. But I'd say, yeah, have your aldermen ready to go to clear this up before anything. And I'm hoping that the story will just get the departments to get out of Guthrie.
And I'm sorry, we're out of time. Thank you so much, Lee Greenhouse, Monica Ang. Go to my website. I'm going to have the information up there where you can contact the aldermen. Mr. Brown Thumb, thank you. And join us back next week on the Mike Novak Show.